He learned his courtesies. Tyrion paused to admire the pair of Valyrian sphinxes that guarded the door, affecting an air of casual confidence. Cersei could smell weakness the way a dog smells fear. What are you doing here? His sister's lovely green eyes studied him without the least hint of affection. Delivering a letter from her lord father. He sauntered to the table and placed the tightly rolled parchment between them. The eunuch, Varys, took the letter and turned it in his delicate powdered hands. How kind of Lord Tywin, and his sealing wax is such a lovely shade of gold. Varys gave the seal a close inspection. It gives every appearance of being genuine. Well, of course it's genuine. Cersei snatched it out of his hands. She broke the wax and unrolled the parchment. Tyrion watched her read. His sister had taken the king's seat for herself. He gathered Joffrey did not often trouble to attend council meetings, no more than Robert had. So Tyrion climbed up into the hand's chair. It seemed only appropriate. This is absurd, the queen said at last. My lord father has sent my brother to sit in his place in this council. He bids us accept Tyrion as the hand of the king until such time as he himself can join us. Grand Maester Pycelle stroked his flowing white beard and nodded ponderously.
It would seem that a welcome is in order.
Indeed. Jowly, balding Janus Slint looked rather like a frog, a smug frog, who had gotten rather above himself.
We have sore need of you, my lord. Rebellion everywhere. This grim omen in the sky. Rioting in the city streets.
And whose fault is that, Lord Janus? Cersei lashed out. Your gold cloaks are charged with keeping order. As to you, Tyrion, you could better serve us on the field of battle. He laughed.
No, I'm done with fields of battle, thank you. I set a chair better than a horse, and I'd rather hold a wine goblet than a battle axe. All that about the thunder of the drums, sunlight flashing on armor, magnificent destriers snorting and prancing. Well, the drums gave me headaches. The sunlight flashing on my armor cooked me up like a harvest day goose. And those magnificent destriers shit everywhere. Not that I'm complaining, compared to the hospitality I enjoyed in the Vale of Arryn. Drums, horseshit, and fly bites are my favorite things. Littlefinger laughed.
Well said, Lannister. Man of my own heart. Tyrion smiled at him, remembering a certain dagger with a dragonbone hilt and a Valyrian steel blade.
We must have a talk about that, and soon.
He wondered if Lord Petyr would find that subject amusing as well.
Please, he told them, do let me be of service in whatever small way I can.
Cersei read the letter again. How many men have you brought with you?
A few hundred, my own men chiefly. Father was loath to part with any of his. He is fighting a war, after all.
What use will your few hundred men be if Renly marches on the city or Stannis sails from Dragonstone? I ask for an army, and my father sends me a dwarf. The king names the hand, with the consent of council. Joffrey named our lord father.
And our lord father named me.
He cannot do that, not without Joff's consent.
Lord Tywin is at Harrenhal with his host, if you care to take it up with him,
Tyrion said politely.
My lords, perchance you would permit me a private word with my sister.
Varys slithered to his feet, smiling in that unctuous way he had. How you must have yearned for the sound of your sweet sister's voice. My lords, please, let us give them a few moments together. The woes of our troubled realm shall keep. Janus Slint rose hesitantly, and Grand Maester Pycelle ponderously, yet they rose. Littlefinger was the last.
Shall I tell the steward to prepare chambers in Maegor's Holdfast?
My thanks, Lord Petyr, but I will be taking Lord Stark's former quarters in the Tower of the Hand.
Littlefinger laughed.
You're a braver man than me, Lannister. You do know the fate of our last two hens. Two? If you mean to frighten me, why not say four? Four? Littlefinger raised an eyebrow. Did the hens before Lord Aaron meet some dire end in the tower? I'm afraid I was too young to pay them much mind. Aerys Targaryen's last hand was killed during the sack of King's Landing, though I doubt he'd had time to settle into the tower. He was only hand for a fortnight. The one before him was burned to death, and before them came two others who died landless and penniless in exile and counted themselves lucky. I believe my lord father was the last hand to depart King's Landing with his name, properties, and parts all intact. Fascinating, said Littlefinger. And all the more reason I'd sooner bed down in the dungeon. Perhaps you'll get that wish, Tyrion thought. But he said, courage and folly are cousins, or so I've heard. Whatever curse may linger over the Tower of the Hand, I pray I'm small enough to escape its notice. Janus Slint laughed. Littlefinger smiled, and Grand Maester Pycelle followed them both out, bowing gravely. I hope Father did not send you all this way to plague us with history lessons, his sister said when they were alone. How I've yearned for the sound of your sweet voice, Tyrion sighed to her. How I have yearned to have that eunuch's tongue pulled out with hot pincers, Cersei replied. Has Father lost his senses, or did you forge this letter? She read it once more with mounting annoyance. Why would he inflict you on me? I wanted him to come himself. She crushed Lord Tywin's letter in her fingers. I am Joffrey's regent, and I sent him a royal command. And he ignored you, Tyrion pointed out. He has quite a large army. He can do that. Nor is he the first, is he?
Cersei's mouth tightened. He could see her color rising. If I name this letter a forgery and tell them to throw you in a dungeon, no one will ignore that, I promise you. He was walking on rotten ice now, Tyrion knew. One false step and he would plunge through.
No one, he agreed amiably, least of all our father, the one with the army. But why should you want to throw me in a dungeon, sweet sister, when I've come all this way to help you?
I do not require your help. It was our father's presence that I commanded.
Yes, he said quietly, but it's Jaime you want.
His sister fancied herself subtle, but he had grown up with her. He could read her face like one of his favorite books, and what he read now was rage and fear and despair.
Jaime is my brother, no less than yours, Tyrion interrupted. Give me your support, and I promise you, we will have Jaime freed and returned to us unarmed.
How? Cersei demanded. The Stark boy and his mother are not like to forget that we beheaded Lord Eddard.
True, Tyrion agreed. Yet you still hold his daughters, don't you? I saw the older girl out in the yard with Joffrey.
Sansa, the queen said. I've given it out that I have the younger brat as well, but it's a lie. I sent Meryn Trant to take her in hand when Robert died, but a wretched dancing master interfered and the girl fled. No one has seen her since. Likely she's dead. A great many people died that day. Tyrion had hoped for both Stark girls, but he supposed one would have to do.
Tell me about our friends on the council.
His sister glanced at the door. What of them?
Father seems to have taken a dislike to them. When I left him, he was wondering how their heads might look on the wall beside Lord Stark's.
He leaned forward across the table.
Are you certain of their loyalty? Do you trust them?
I trust no one, Cersei snapped. I need them. Does Father believe they are playing us false?
Suspects, rather. Why?
What does he know? Tyrion shrugged.
He knows that your son's short reign has been a long parade of follies and disasters. That suggests that someone is giving Joffrey some very bad counsel.
Cersei gave him a searching look. Joff has had no lack of good counsel. He's always been strong-willed. Now that he's king, he believes he should do as he pleases, not as he's bid. Crowns do queer things to heads beneath them, Tyrion agreed. This business with Eddard Stark, Joffrey's work? The queen grimaced. He was instructed to pardon Stark, to allow him to take the black. The man would have been out of our way forever, and we might have made peace with that son of his. But Joff took it upon himself to give the mob a better show. What was I to do? He called for Lord Eddard's head in front of half the city. And Janus Slint and Sir Ilion went ahead blithely and shortened the man without a word from me. A hand tightened into a fist. The High Septon claims we profaned Baelor's sept with blood after lying to him about our intent.
It would seem he has a point, said Tyrion. So this Lord Slint, he was part of it, was he? Tell me, whose fine notion was it to grant him Harrenhal and name him to the council?
Littlefinger made the arrangements. We needed Slint's gold cloaks. Eddard Stark was plotting with Renly, and he'd written to Lord Stannis, offering him the throne. We might have lost all. Even so, it was a close thing. If Sansa hadn't come to me and told me all her father's plans... Tyrion was surprised.
Truly, his own daughter, eh?
Sansa had always seemed such a sweet child, tender and courteous. The girl was wet with love. She would have done anything for Joffrey, until he cut her father's head off and called it mercy. That put an end to that.
His Grace has a unique way of winning the hearts of his subjects, Tyrion said with a crooked smile. Was it Joffrey's wish to dismiss Sir Barristan Selmy from his Kingsguard too?
Cersei sighed. Joffrey wanted someone to blame for Robert's death. Varys suggested Sir Barristan. Why not? He gave Jaime a command for the Kingsguard and a seat on the small council, and allowed Joff to throw a bone to his dog. He's very fond of Sandor Clegane. We were prepared to offer Selmy some land and a tower house, more than the useless old fool deserved.
I hear that useless old fool slew two of Slint's gold cloaks when they tried to seize him at the Mud Gate.
His sister looked very unhappy. Janus should have sent more men. He is not as competent as might be wished.
Sir Barristan was the Lord Commander of Robert Baratheon's King's Guard, Tyrion reminded her pointedly. He and Jaime are the only survivors of Aerys Targaryen's Seven. The small folk talk of him in the same way they talk of Serwyn of the Mirror Shield and Prince Aemon the Dragon Knight. What do you imagine they'll think when they see Barristan the Bold riding beside Robb Stark or Stannis Baratheon?
Cersei glanced away. I had not considered that.
Father did, said Tyrion. That is why he sent me, to put an end to these follies and bring your son to Ile.
Joff will be no more tractable for you than for me.
Oh, he might.
Why should he?
He knows you would never hurt him.
Cersei's eyes narrowed. If you believe I'd ever allow you to harm my son, you're sick with fever. Tyrion sighed. She'd missed the point, as she did so often.
Joffrey is as safe with me as he is with you, he assured her. But so long as the boy feels threatened, he'll be more inclined to listen.
He took her hand.
I am your brother, you know. You need me, whether you care to admit it or no. Your son needs me, if he's to have a hope of retaining that ugly iron chair.
His sister seemed shocked that he would touch her. You have always been cunning.
In my own small way, he grinned.
It may be worth a trying, but make no mistake, Tyrion. If I accept you, you shall be the king's hand in name, but my hand in truth. You will share all your plans and intentions with me before you act, and you will do nothing without my consent. Do you understand?
Oh, yes.
Do you agree?
Certainly, he lied. I am your sister. For as long as I need to be. So now that we are of one purpose, we ought to have no more secrets between us. You say Joffrey had Lord Eddard killed. Varys dismissed Sir Barristan, and Littlefinger gifted us with Lord Slint. Who murdered John Arryn? Cersei yanked her hand back. How should I know? The grieving widow in the Eyrie seems to think it was me. Where did she come by that notion, I wonder?
Well, I'm sure I don't know. That fool Eddard Stark accused me of the same thing. He hinted that Lord Arryn suspected or, well, believed
that you were fucking our sweet Jamie.
She slapped him.
Did you think I was as blind as father?
Tyrion rubbed his cheek.
Who you lie with is no matter with me, although it doesn't seem quite just that you should open your legs for one brother and not the other.
She slapped him.
Oh, be gentle, Cersei. I'm only jesting with you. If truth be told, I'd soon have a nice whore. I never understood what Jaime saw in you, apart from his own reflection.
She slapped him. His cheeks were red and burning, yet he smiled.
If you keep doing that, I may get angry.
That stayed her hand. Why should I care if you do?
Oh, I have some new friends, Tyrion confessed. You won't like them at all. How did you kill Robert?
He did that himself. All we did was help. When Lancel saw that Robert was going after Boar, he gave him strong wine. His favorite sour red, but fortified, three times as potent as he was used to. The great stinking fool loved it. He could have stopped swilling it down any time he cared to, but no, he drained one skin and told Lancel to fetch another. The boar did the rest. You should have been at the feast, Tyrion. There has never been a boar so delicious. They cooked it with mushrooms and apples, and it tasted like triumph.
Truly, sister, you were born to be a widow.
Tyrion had rather liked Robert Baratheon, great, blustering oaf that he was, doubtless in part because his sister loathed him so.
Now, if you've done slapping me, I will be off.
He twisted his legs around and clambered down awkwardly from the chair. Cersei frowned. I haven't given you leave to depart. I want to know how you intend to free Jaime.
I'll tell you when I know. Schemes are like fruit. They require a certain ripening. Right now, I have a mind to ride through the streets and take the measure of this city.
Tyrion rested his hand on the head of the Sphinx beside the door.
One parting request. Kindly make certain no harm comes to Sansa Stark. It would not do to lose both the daughters.
Outside the council chamber, Tyrion nodded to Sir Mandon and made his way down the long vaulted hall. Bronn fell in beside him. Of Timmet, son of Timmet, there was no sign.
Where is our Red Hand?
Tyrion asked.
He felt an urge to explore. His kind was not made for waiting about in halls.
I hope he doesn't kill anyone important.
The clansmen Tyrion had brought down from their fastnesses in the Mountains of the Moon were loyal in their own fierce way, but they were proud and quarrelsome as well, prone to answer insults real or imagined with steel.
Try to find him, and while you're at it, see that the rest have been quartered and fed. I want them in the barracks beneath the Tower of the Hand, but don't let the steward put the stone crows near the Moon Brothers, and tell him the burned men must have all to themselves.
Where will you be?
I'm riding back to the Broken Anvil.
Bronn grinned insolently.
Need an escort? The talk is, the streets are dangerous.
I'll call upon the captain of my sister's household guard and remind him that I am no less a Lannister than she is. He needs to recall that his oath is to Casterly Rock, not to Cersei or Joffrey.
An hour later, Tyrion rode from the Red Keep accompanied by a dozen Lannister guardsmen in crimson cloaks and lion-crested half-helms. As they passed beneath the portcullis, he noted the heads mounted atop the walls, black with rot and old tar. They had long since become unrecognizable.
"Captain Velar," he called, "I want those taken down on the morrow. Give them to the Silent Sisters for cleaning."
It would be hell to match them with the bodies, he supposed, yet it must be done. Even in the midst of war, certain decencies need to be observed.
Velar grew hesitant. "His Grace has told us he wishes the traitor's heads to remain on the walls until he fills those last three empty spikes there on the end."
"Let me hazard a wild stab. One is for Robb Stark, the others for Lord Stannis and Renly. Would that be right?"
"Yes, my lord."
"My nephew is 13 years old today, Velar. Try and recall that. I'll have the heads down on the morrow, or one of those empty spikes may have a different lodger. Do you take my meaning, Captain?"
"I'll see that they're taken down myself, my lord."
"Good."
Tyrion put his heels into his horse and trotted away, leaving the red cloaks to follow as best they could. He told Cersei he intended to take the measure of the city. That was not entirely a lie. Tyrion Lannister was not pleased by much of what he saw. The streets of King's Landing had always been teeming and raucous and noisy, but now they reeked of danger in a way that he did not recall from past visits. A naked corpse sprawled in the gutter near the Street of Looms, being torn at by a pack of feral dogs. Yet no one seemed to care. Watchmen were much in evidence, moving in pairs through the alleys in their gold cloaks and shirts of black ringmail, iron cudgels never far from their hands. The markets were crowded with ragged men selling their household goods for any price they could get, and conspicuously empty of farmers selling food. What little produce he did see was three times as costly as it had been a year ago. One peddler was hawking rats, roasted on a skewer.
"Fresh rats!" he cried loudly. "Fresh rats!"
Doubtless fresh rats were to be preferred to old, stale, rotten rats. The frightening thing was, the rats looked more appetizing than most of what the butchers were selling. On the Street of Flour, Tyrion saw guards at every other shop door. When times grew lean, even bakers found sellswords cheaper than bread, he reflected.
"There is no food coming in, is there?" he said to Velar.
"Little enough," the captain admitted. "With the war in the Riverlands and Lord Renly raising rebels in Highgarden, the roads are closed to south and west."
"And what has my good sister done about this?"
"She is taking steps to restore the king's peace," Velar assured him. "Lord Slint has triple the size of the city watch, and the queen has put 1,000 craftsmen to work on our defences. The stonemasons are strengthening the walls. Carpenters are building scorpions and catapults by the hundred. Fletchers are making arrows. The smiths are forging blades. And the Alchemist Guild has pledged 10,000 jars of wildfire."
Tyrion shifted uncomfortably in his saddle. He was pleased that Cersei had not been idle. But wildfire was treacherous stuff, and 10,000 jars were enough to turn all of King's Landing into cinders.
"Where has my sister found the coin to pay for all this?"
It was no secret that King Robert had left the crown vastly in debt. An alchemist was seldom mistaken for altruists.
"Lord Littlefinger always finds a way, my lord. He has imposed a tax on those wishing to enter the city."
"Yes, that would work," Tyrion said, thinking, "Clever. Clever and cruel."
Tens of thousands had fled the fighting for the supposed safety of King's Landing. He had seen them on the King's Road, troops of mothers and children, and anxious fathers, who had gazed on his horses and wagons with covetous eyes. Once they reached the city, they would doubtless pay over all they had to put those high, comforting walls between them and the war, though they might think twice if they knew about the wildfire. The inn, beneath the sign of the broken anvil, stood within sight of those walls, near the gate of the guards where they had entered that morning. As they rode into its courtyard, a boy ran out to help Tyrion down from his horse.
"Take your men back to the castle," he told Valar. "I'll be spending the night here."
The captain looked dubious.
"Will you be safe, my lord?"
"Well, as to that, captain, when I left the inn this morning, it was full of black ears. One is never quite safe when Shella, daughter of Cheek, is about."
Tyrion waddled towards the door, leaving Valar to puzzle at his meaning. A gust of merriment greeted him as he shoved into the inn's common room. He recognized Chella's throaty chuckle and the lighter music of Shay's laughter. The girl was seated by the hearth, sipping wine at her round wooden table with three of the black ears he'd left to guard her, and a plump man whose back was to him. The innkeeper, he assumed, until Shay called Tyrion by name and the intruder rose.
"My good lord, I'm so pleased to see you," he gushed, a soft eunuch smile on his powdered face.
Tyrion stumbled.
"Lord Varys, I had not thought to see you here."
"The others take him. How did he find them so quickly?"
"Forgive me if I intrude," Varys said. "I was taken by a sudden urge to meet your young lady."
"Young lady," Shay repeated, savoring the words. "You're half right, my lord. I'm young."
18, Tyrion thought. 18 and a whore. But quick of wit, nimble as a cat between the sheets, with large dark eyes and fine black hair, and a sweet, soft, hungry little mouth. And mine. Damn you, eunuch.
"I fear I'm the intruder, Lord Varys," he said with forced courtesy. "When I came in, you were in the midst of some merriment."
"My Lord Varys complimented Cello on her ears and said she must have killed many men to have such a fine necklace,"
Shay explained. It grated on him to hear her call Varys, "my lord," in that tone. That was what she called him in their pillow play.
"And Cella told him only cowards kill the vanquished."
"Braver to leave the man alive with a chance to cleanse his shame by winning back his ear,"
explained Cella, a small dark woman whose grisly neckwear was hung with no less than 46 dried, wrinkled ears. Tyrion had counted them once.
"Only so you can prove you do not fear your enemies."
Shay hooted.
"And then my lord says that if he was a black ear, he'd never sleep for dreams of one-eared men."
"A problem. I will never need face," Tyrion said. "I'm terrified of my enemies, so I kill them all."
Varys giggled.
"Will you take some wine with us, my lord?"
"I'll take some wine."
Tyrion seated himself beside Shay. He understood what was happening here, if Chella and the girl did not. Varys was delivering a message. When he said,
"I was taken by a sudden urge to meet your young lady," what he meant was, "You tried to hide her, but I knew where she was and who she was, and here I am."
He wondered who had betrayed him. The innkeeper, that boy in the stable, a guard on the gate, or one of his own?
"I always like to return to the city through the gate of the guards," Varys told Shay as he filled the wine cups. "The carvings on the gatehouse are exquisite. They make me weep each time I see them. The eyes, so expressive, don't you think? They almost seem to follow you as you ride beneath the portcullis."
"I never noticed, my lord," Shay replied. "I'll look again on the morrow, if it please you."
"Don't bother, sweetling," Tyrion thought, swirling the wine in the cup.
"He cares not a whit about carvings. The eyes he boasts of are his own. What he means is that he was watching, that he knew we were here the moment we passed through the gates."
"Do be careful, child," Varys urged. King's Landing is not wholly safe these days. I know these streets well, and yet I almost feared to come today, alone and unarmed as I was. Lawless men are everywhere in this dark time. Oh, yes, men with cold steel and colder hearts. Where I can come alone and unarmed, others can come with swords in their fists, he was saying. Shay only laughed.
If they try and bother me, they'll be one air short when Cello runs them off.
Varys hooted as if that was the funniest thing he'd ever heard. But there was no laughter in his eyes when he turned them on Tyrion.
Your young lady has an amiable way to her. I should take very good care of her if I were you.
I intend to. Any man who tries to arm her, well, I'm too small to be a black ear, and I make no claims to courage. See, I speak the same tongue as you, eunuch. At her, and I'll have your head.
I will leave you, Varys rose. I know how weary you must be. I only wish to welcome you, my lord, and tell you how very pleased I am by your arrival. We have dire need of you on the council. Have you seen the comet?
I'm short, not blind, Tyrion said.
Out on the King's Road, it seemed to cover half the sky, outshining the crescent moon. In the streets, they call it the Red Messenger, Varys said. They say it comes as a herald before a king to warn of fire and blood to follow. The eunuch rubbed his powdered hands together. May I leave you with a bit of a riddle, Lord Tyrion? He did not wait for an answer. In a room sit three great men, a king, a priest, and a rich man with his gold. Between them stands a sellsword. A little man of common birth and no great mind. Each of the great ones bids him slay the other two. Do it, says the king, for I am your lawful ruler. Do it, said the priest, for I command you in the name of the gods. Do it, said the rich man, and all this gold shall be yours. So tell me, who lives and who dies? Bowing deeply, the eunuch hurried from the common room on soft, slippered feet. When he was gone, Cella gave a snort, and Shay wrinkled up her pretty face.
The rich man lives, doesn't he?
Tyrion sipped his wine, thoughtful.
Perhaps, or not. That would depend on the sellsword, it seems.
He set down his cup.
Come, let's go upstairs.
She had to wait for him at the top of the steps, for her legs were slim and supple, while his were short and stunted and full of aches. But she was smiling when he reached her.
Did you miss me? She teased as she took his hand. Desperately,
Tyrion admitted. Shay only stood a shade above 5 feet, yet still he must look up to her. But in her case, he found he did not mind. She was sweet to look up at.
You'll miss me all the time in your red keep, she said as she led him to her room, all alone in your cold bed, in your Tower of the Hand.
Too true. Tyrion would gladly have kept her with him, but his lord father had forbidden it. You will not take the whore to court, Lord Tywin had commanded. Bringing her to the city was as much defiance as he dared. All his authority derived from his father, the girl had to understand that.
You won't be far, he promised. You'll have a house with guards and servants, and I'll visit as often as I am able.
Shay kicked shut the door. Through the cloudy panes of the narrow window, he could make out the great sept of Baelor crowning Visenya's hill. But Tyrion was distracted by a different sight. Bending, Shay took her gown by the hem, drew it over her head, and tossed it aside. She did not believe in small clothes.
You'll never be able to rest, she said,
as she stood before him,
pink and nude and lovely, one hand braced on her hip.
You'll think of me every time you go to bed. Then you'll get hard, and you'll have no one to help you. And you'll never be able to sleep unless you...
She grinned, that wicked grin Tyrion liked so well.
Is that why they call it the Tower of the Hand, my lord?
Be quiet and kiss me, he commanded. He could taste the wine on her lips and feel her small, firm breasts pressed against him as her fingers moved to the lacings of his breeches.
My lion,
she whispered when he broke off the kiss to undress.
My sweet lord, my giant of Lannister.
Tyrion pushed her toward the bed. When he entered her, she screamed loud enough to wake Baelor the Blessed in his tomb, and her nails left gouges in his back. He never had a pain he liked half so well. Fool, he thought to himself afterward, as they lay in the center of the sagging mattress amidst the rumpled sheets.
Will you never learn, dwarf? She's a whore, damn you. It's your coin she loves, not your cuck. Remember Taisha?
Yet when his fingers trailed lightly over one nipple, it stiffened at the touch, and he could see the mark on her breast where he'd bitten her in his passion.
So what will you do, my lord, now that you're the hand of the king?
Shay asked him as he cupped that warm, sweet flesh.
Something Cersei will never expect,
Tyrion murmured softly against her slender neck.
I'll do justice.
Bran preferred the hard stone of the window seat to the comforts of his feather bed and blankets. A bed, the walls pressed close and the ceiling hung heavy above him. A bed, the room was his cell and Winterfell his prison. Yet outside his window, the wide world still called. He could not walk, nor climb, nor hunt, nor fight with a wooden sword as once he had, but he could still look. He liked to watch the windows begin to glow all over Winterfell as candles and hearth fires were lit behind the diamond-shaped panes of tower and hall, and he loved to listen to the direwolf sing to the stars. Of late, he often dreamed of wolves.
They are talking to me, brother to brother,
he told himself when the direwolves howled.
He could almost understand them. Not quite, not truly, but almost, as if they were singing in a language he had once known and somehow forgotten.
The Walders might be scared of them, but the Starks had wolf blood. Old Nan told him so.
They'll be stronger in some than in others, she warned.
Summer's howls were long and sad, full of grief and longing. Shaggy dogs were more savage. Their voices echoed through the yards and halls until the castle rang, and it seemed as though some great pack of direwolves haunted Winterfell, instead of only two. Two where there had once been six. Do they miss their brothers and sisters too? Bran wondered. Are they calling to Grey Wind and Ghost, to Nymeria and Lady Shade? Do they want them to come home and be a pack together?
Who can know the mind of a wolf?
Sir Roderick Cassel said when Bran asked him why they howled. Bran's lady mother had named him Castellan of Winterfell in her absence, and his duties left him little time for idle questions.
It's freedom they're calling for,
declared Farlan, who was kennel master and had no more love for the direwolves than his hounds did.
They don't like being walled up, and who's to blame them? Wild things belong in the wild, not in a castle.
They want to hunt,
agreed Gage the cook, as he tossed cubes of suet into a great kettle of stew.
A wolf smells better than any man. Like as not, they've caught the scent of prey.
Maester Lewin did not think so.
Wolves often howl at the moon. These are howling at the comet. See how bright it is, Bran.
Perchance they think it is the moon. When Bran repeated that to Usha, she laughed aloud.
Your wolves have more wit than your maester, the Wildling woman said. They know truths the Grey Man has forgotten.
The way she said it made him shiver. And when he asked what the comet meant, she said,
Blood and fire, boy, and nothing sweet.
Bran asked Septon Shale about the comet when they were sorting through some scrolls snatched from the library fire.
It's a sword that slays the season, he replied.
And soon after, the White Raven came from Old Town bringing word of autumn, so doubtless he was right. Though old Nan did not think so. She'd live longer than any of them.
Dragons,
she said, lifting her head and sniffing. She was near blind and could not see the comet, yet she claimed she could smell it.
It be dragons, boy,
she insisted. Bran got no princes from Nan, no more than he ever had. Hodor said only,
Hodor.
That was all he ever said. And still the direwolves howled. The guards on the walls muttered curses. Hounds in the kennels barked furiously. Horses kicked at their stalls. The Walders shivered by their fire. And even Maester Lewin complained of sleepless nights. Only Bran did not mind. Sir Roderick had confined the wolves to the guardswood after Shaggy Dog bit Little Walder. But the stones of Winterfell played queer tricks with sound. And sometimes it sounded as if they were in the yard right below Bran's window. Other times he would have sworn they were up on the curtain walls, loping around like sentries. He wished that he could see them. He could see the comet hanging above the guards' hall and the bell tower, and farther back the first keep squat and round, its gargoyles' black shapes against the bruised purple dusk. Once Bran had known every stone of those buildings, inside and out. He'd climbed them all, scampering up walls as easily as other boys ran downstairs. The rooftops had been his secret places, and the crows atop the broken tower his special friends. And then he had fallen. Bran did not remember falling, yet they said he had, so he supposed it must be true. He'd almost died. When he saw the weather-worn gargoyles atop the first keep, where it had happened, he got a queer, tight feeling in his belly. And now he could not climb, nor walk, nor run, nor sword fight. And the dreams he'd dreamed of knighthood had soured in his head. Summer had howled the day Bran had fallen, and for long after as he lay broken in his bed. Rob had told him so before he went away to war. Summer had mourned for him, and Shaggy Dog and Grey Wind had joined in his grief. And the night the Bloody Raven had brought word of their father's death, the wolves had known that too. Bran had been in the Maester's turret with Rickon, talking of the children of the forest, when Summer and Shaggy Dog had drowned out Lewin with their howls. Who are they mourning now? Had some enemy slain the king in the north, who used to be his brother, Rob? Had his bastard brother, Jon Snow, fallen from the wall? Had his mother died, or one of his sisters? Or was this something else, as Maester and Septon and old Nan seemed to think? If I were truly a direwolf, I would understand the song, he thought wistfully. In his wolf dreams, he could race up the side of mountains, jagged, icy mountains, taller than any tower, and stand at the summit beneath the full moon with all the world below him the way it used to be. Ow! Bran cried tentatively. He cupped his hands around his mouth and lifted his head to the comet. Ow! Ow! He howled. It sounded stupid, high and hollow and quavering, a little boy's howl, not a wolf's. Yet Summer gave answer, his deep voice drowning out Bran's thin one, and Shaggy Dog made it a chorus. Bran hurrooed again. They howled together, last of their pack. The noise brought a guard to his door, Hayhead, with a wen on his nose. He peered in,
saw Bran howling out of the window and said, "What's this, my prince?" It made Bran feel queer when they called him prince. Although he was Rob's heir and Rob was king in the north now, he turned his head to howl at the guard. "Oh, oh!" Ahead screwed up his face. "Now you stop that there. Oh, oh!" The guardsman retreated. When he came back, Maester Lewin was with him, all in grey, his chain tight about his neck.
"Bran, those beasts make sufficient noise without your help."
He crossed the room and put his hand on the boy's brow. "The hour grows late. You ought to be fast asleep." "I'm talking to the wolves." Bran brushed the hand aside.
"Shall I have Hayhead carry you to your bed?"
"I can get to bed myself."
Mickon had hammered a row of iron bars into the wall so Bran could pull himself about the room with his arms. It was slow and hard, and it made his shoulders ache, but he hated being carried.
"Anyway, I don't have to sleep if I don't want to."
"All men must sleep, Bran, even princes."
"When I sleep, I turn into a wolf."
Bran turned his face away and looked back out into the night.
"Do wolves dream?" "All creatures dream, I think, yet not as men do."
"Do dead men dream?"
Bran asked, thinking of his father. In the dark crypts below Winterfell, a stonemason was chiseling out his father's likeness in granite.
"Some say yes, some no,"
the maester answered.
"The dead themselves are silent on the matter." "Do trees dream?"
"Trees, no."
"They do,"
Bran said with sudden certainty.
"They dream tree dreams. I dream of a tree sometimes. A weirwood, like the one in the guard's wood. It calls to me. The wolf dreams are better. I smell things, and sometimes I can taste the blood."
Maester Lewin tugged at his chain where it chafed his neck.
"If you would only spend more time with the other children."
"I hate the other children," Bran said, meaning the Walders. "I commanded you to send them away."
Lewin grew stern.
"The Freys are your lady mother's wards, sent here to be fostered at her express command. It is not for you to expel them, nor is it kind. If we turn them out, where would they go?"
"Home. It's therefore you won't let me have summer."
"The Frey boy did not ask to be attacked," the maester said, "no more than I did." "That was Shaggy Dog."
Rickon's big black wolf was so wild he even frightened Bran at times.
"Summer never bit anyone." "Summer ripped out a man's throat in this very chamber, or have you forgotten? The truth is, those sweet pups you and your brothers found in the snow have grown into dangerous beasts. The Frey boys are wise to be wary of them."
"We should put the Walders in the Godswood. They could play Lord of the Crossing all they want, and Summer could sleep with me again. If I'm the prince, why won't you heed me? I wanted to ride Dancer, but Alebelly wouldn't let me pass the gate."
"And rightly so. The Wolf's Wood is full of danger. Your last ride should have taught you that. Would you want some outlaw to take you captive and sell you to the Lannisters?"
"Summer would save me,"
Bran insisted stubbornly.
"Princes should be allowed to sail the sea and hunt boar in the Wolf's Wood and joust with lances."
"Bran, child, why do you torment yourself so? One day you may do some of these things, but now you're only a boy of 8.
I'd sooner be a wolf than I could live in the wood and sleep when I wanted. And I could find Arya and Sansa. I'd smell where they were and go save them. And when Rob went to battle, I'd fight beside him like Grey Wind. I'd tear out the Kingslayer's throat with my teeth. Rip! And then the war would be over and everyone would come back to Winterfell. If I was a wolf," he howled. "Oh!"
Lewin raised his voice.
"A true prince would welcome..." "Oh!"
Bran howled louder.
"Oh!"
The maester surrendered.
"As you will, child."
With a look that was part grief and part disgust, he left the bedchamber.
Howling lost its savor once Bran was alone. After a time, he quieted.
I did welcome them, he told himself, resentful. I was the lord in Winterfell, a true lord. I can't say I wasn't.
When the Walders arrived from the towers, it had been Rickon who wanted them gone. A baby of four, he had screamed that he wanted mother and father and Rob, not these strangers. It had been up to Bran to soothe him and bid the Freys welcome. He had offered them meat and mead and a seat by the fire, and even Maester Lewin had said afterward that he had done well. Only that was before the game. The game was played with a log, a staff, a body of water, and a great deal of shouting. The water was the most important, Walder and Walder assured Bran. You could use a plank or even a series of stones, and a branch could be your staff. You didn't have to shout, but without water there was no game. As Maester Lewin and Sir Roderick were not about to let the children go wandering off into the Wolf's Wood in search of a stream, they made do with one of the murky pools in the Godswood. Walder and Walder had never seen hot water bubbling from the ground before, but they both allowed how it would make the game even better. Both of them were called Walder Frey. Big Walder said there were bunches of Walders at the Twins, all named after the boy's grandfather, Lord Walder Frey.
We have our own names at Winterfell, Rickon told them haughtily when he heard that.
The way their game was played, you laid a log across the water, and one player stood in the middle with a stick. He was the Lord of the Crossing, and when one of the other players came up, he had to say, I am the Lord of the Crossing, who goes there? And the other player had to make up a speech about who they were and why they should be allowed to cross. The Lord could make them swear oaths and answer questions. They didn't have to tell the truth, but the oaths were binding unless they said mayhaps, so the trick was to say mayhaps so the Lord of the Crossing didn't notice. Then you could try and knock the Lord into the water, and you got to be Lord of the Crossing, but only if you'd said mayhaps. Otherwise, you were out of the game. The Lord got to knock anyone in the water any time he pleased, and he was the only one who got to use a stick. In practice, the game seemed to come down to mostly shoving, hitting, and falling into the water, along with a lot of loud arguments about whether or not someone had said mayhaps. Little Walder was Lord of the Crossing more often than not. He was Little Walder, even though he was tall and stout, with a red face and a big round belly. Big Walder was sharp-faced and skinny and half a foot shorter.
He's 52 days older than me, Little Walder explained. So he was bigger at first, but I grew faster.
We're cousins, not brothers, answered Big Walder, the little one. I'm Walder, son of Jamis. My father was Lord Walder's son by his fourth wife. He's Walder's son of merit. His grandmother was Lord Walder's third wife, the Craycor. He's ahead of me in the line of succession, even though I'm older.
Only by 52 days, Little Walder objected, and neither of us will ever hold the Twins, stupid.
I will, Big Walder declared. We're not the only Walders either. Sir Stevron has a grandson, Black Walder, he's fourth in line of succession. And there's Red Walder, Sir Eamon's son, and Bastard Walder, who isn't in the line at all. He's called Walder Rivers, not Walder Frey, plus there's girls named Walder.
And Tyre, you always forget Tyre.
He's Waltyre, not Walder, Big Walder said airily, and he's after us, so he doesn't matter. Anyhow, I never liked him.
Sir Roderick decreed that they would share Jon Snow's old bedchamber, since Jon was in the Night's Watch and never coming back. Bran hated that. It made him feel as if the Freys were trying to steal Jon's place. He had watched wistfully while the Walders contested with Turnip the cook's boy and Joseph's girls Bandy and Shira. The Walders had decreed that Bran should be the judge and decide whether or not people had said mayhaps. But as soon as they started playing, they forgot all about him. The shouts and splashes soon drew others, Pala, the kennel girl. Kane's boy, Kalen. Tom, too, whose father, Fat Tom, had died with Bran's father at King's Landing. Before very long, every one of them was soaked and muddy. Pala was brown from head to heel, with moss in her hair, breathless from laughter. Bran had not heard so much laughing since the night the bloody raven came. If I had my legs, I'd knock them all into the water, he thought bitterly. No one would ever be Lord of the Crossing but me. Finally, Rickon came running into the Godswood, Shaggy Dog at his heels. He watched Turnip and Little Walder struggle for the stick until Turnip lost his footing and went in with a huge splash, arms waving. Rickon yelled, Me now, I want to play. Little Walder beckoned him on, and Shaggy Dog started to follow.
No, Shaggy, his brother commanded. Wolves can't play, you stay with Bran.
And he did, until Little Walder had smacked Rickon with a stick square across his belly. Before Bran could blink, the black wolf was flying over the plank. There was blood in the water. The Walders were shrieking red murder. Rickon sat in the mud laughing, and Hoda came lumbering in, shouting, Hoda! 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 After that, oddly, Rickon decided he liked the Walders. They never played Lord of the Crossing again, but they played other games. Monsters and maidens, rats and cats, come into my castle, all sorts of things. With Rickon by their side, the Walders plundered the kitchen for pies and honeycombs, raced round the walls, tossed bones to the pups in the kennels, and trained with wooden swords under Sir Roderick's sharp eye. Rickon even showed them the deep vaults under the earth, where the stonemason was carving Father's tomb.
You had no right, Bran screamed at his brother when he heard. That was our place. A stark place.
But Rickon never cared. The door to his bedchamber opened. Maester Lewin was carrying a green jar, and this time Usher and Hayhead came with him.
I've made you a sleeping draught, Bran.
Usher scooped him up in her bony arms. She was very tall for a woman, and wiry strong. She bore him effortlessly to his bed.
This will give you dreamless sleep, Maester Lewin said as he pulled the stopper from the jar. Sweet dreamless sleep.
It will, Bran said, wanting to believe.
Yes, drink.
Bran drank. The potion was thick and chalky, but there was honey in it, so it went down easy.
Come the morn, you'll feel better.
Lewin gave Bran a smile and a pat as he took his leave. Usher lingered behind.
Is it the wolf dreams again?
Bran nodded.
You should not fight so hard, boy. I see you talking to the heart tree. Maybe the gods are trying to talk back.
The gods? He murmured, drowsy already. Usher's face grew blurry and grey. Sweet, dreamless sleep, Bran thought. Yet when the darkness closed over him, he found himself in the Godswood, moving silently beneath green-grey sentinels and gnarled oaks as old as time. I am walking, he thought, exulting. Part of him knew that it was only a dream, but even the dream of walking was better than the truth of his bedchamber, walls, and ceiling and door. It was dark amongst the trees, but the comet lit his way, and his feet were sure. He was moving on four good legs, strong and swift, and he could feel the ground underfoot, the soft crackling of fallen leaves, thick roots and hard stones, the deep layers of humus. It was a good feeling. The smells filled his head, alive and intoxicating. The green muddy stink of the hot pools, the perfume of rich, rotting earth beneath his paws, the squirrels in the oaks. The scent of squirrel made him remember the taste of hot blood and the way the bones would crack beneath his teeth. Slaver filled his mouth. He had eaten no more than half a day past, yet there was no joy in dead meat, even deer. He could hear the squirrels chittering and rustling above him, safe among their leaves, but they knew better than to come down to where his brother and he were prowling. He could smell his brother, too, a familiar scent, strong and earthy, his scent as black as his coat. His brother was loping around the walls, full of fury. Round and round he went, night after day after night, tireless searching for prey.